Hey AIM members, have you heard? Early bird registration for AIM Fuse 2020 has been extended. Lock in the discounted ticket price of $125 for next year's Fuse conference. Head over to aimgroup.com/fuse to grab your early bird spot before they're all sold out. Hey, welcome to Broker to Broker. This podcast is all about real talk from one broker to another. Each week, we'll be talking with an AIM member about their journey into the broker channel, their challenges, and unique insights. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Thank you for hitting the record directly after I said that.
It's on camera.
It's all good. Welcome to Broker. Today we have a little special edition podcast with my boy and chairman of AIM, Anthony Casa. What's up, man?
It's great to finally be a participant in Broker to Broker with you as the host. You've done an incredible job. I don't think our listeners understand the sacrifice that you're actually making to do this. I mean, this is an all-day thing when you come here.
It is. No, but I appreciate it.
When we were kicking around this idea of Broker to Broker, I recorded a couple sessions, and we listened to them, and, you know, my team was like, this is not good.
Really?
Because you got to have a certain personality to be the guy that's interviewing. You know, you have to have the, you know, you have to be in the weeds too. Mm-hmm. So like for me, I haven't originated a loan since, I mean, the first quarter of 2018. Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically, it's about to be the first quarter of 2020. It's been 2 years. It's a long time.
I thought it was longer than that, to be honest.
Honestly, it's been 2 years, a long time.
Yeah.
So when I really started thinking about it, I was like, we need somebody that's still in the weeds, brokering loans, mm-hmm. running a business, trying to grow a business. And you just kind of popped in our heads, and we were like, man, if he would be willing to do this, we could have a great show, and it has been.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. And it's been so much fun, and yeah, we're running hard, but like you said, you kind of wanted someone, whether it was me or someone else, someone in the weeds. Yeah. Like, I'm feeling it every single day, you know, and running up here and doing it. And I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way, but you kind of want that.
You do. I see it when you're here. Like when you're here and you're
got
literally,
you got the laptop open,
you're making calls, you got, you know, EPO requests coming in, you have your brother calling you about some issues.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you're literally in the weeds of it, but I'll tell you, when I listen to the episodes, and when people, you know, I get so much feedback on these episodes, and people love them. I can't wait for more and more people to hear these episodes, because we probably have a couple thousand people that are listening right now at this point. But once, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 people are listening to these episodes, I just the change that these interviews are going to impact on your everyday originator is going to be massive.
It's
like, you know, I look at it, we're like in business school here. You're sitting here talking to the top originators in the country, people that have went through 10 years of building their business, whether it's as an originator or as a broker owner. And here they are just divulging, you know, the how-to behind all of that. So I just think the content's been really, really
great. And it's funny, I'll leave after talking to certain people and I get pissed at myself because I'm like, why am I not doing that? I'm up here doing this. And what, I mean, like just for like Ramon on Friday, like the stuff that was coming out of his head was like, I mean, it was just, he's just so smart. Everyone has been, but that one's fresh in my mind.
I've seen it, you know, even for me, like, you know, we had a great and a very special company at Garden State Home Loans, and still a very special company. But sometimes I'll sit here and talk to other brokers with different business models, and I'll sit there and say, man, like, why didn't we do that? Why didn't we try that? And again, what it really comes down to 99% of the time is you don't know what you don't know. Mm. So like, you know, it's easy to sit here and listen to that episode and be like, man, why wasn't I doing that?
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't know. That's not the way that you cut your teeth in the business. For Ramon and for Shelby and for Peter and Matt Oliver and Lisa Lund, all these people, they have very different models. And they're experts at those models. So for us at Garden State, like, we knew our inside model, we knew how we built our business.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think it's, you know, that's an amazing business. At the same time, you know, when you see this diversity of different ways of building a business, it's, you know, it's impressive.
Well, yeah, well, let's dive into that then. Cause we're doing this because we're jumping into 2020.
Yep.
We want to get prepared. And you're on the front line of speaking to tons of brokers every day. I mean, you give out your cell phone, right? Your email. I mean, you're getting hit from every angle. So you're seeing what's going on out there from all different types of brokers, right? So that's why we're doing this, to figure out what other brokers are doing, the type of questions that they have, the blind spots, the common areas of where they need help, right? So you're seeing this. So can we dive into that, what you're seeing out there, the common questions you get?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a couple different things. So you have, you know, a lot of the brokers that come out to Philadelphia that are, you know, on broker to broker and participate mm-hmm. in some of the things we're doing, you know, every single time we're sitting down, we're talking about how they can get to where they want to go, or how, you know, how they, it's really comes down to execution in most mm-hmm. of these cases. So, you know, for example, I'll sit down with a loan officer that is, you know, 250, 300 units a year, unbelievable business, making mm-hmm. a ton of money. And they'll sit there and they'll come in and they'll tell me, like, Anthony, I'm doing this volume and I'm making a ton of money, but I'm killing myself because yeah. I haven't put in processes. I haven't implemented systems. Mm-hmm. I'm the originator. I'm the LOA. I'm the processor. I'm the closer. And yeah. I'm also the marketing department. And that conversation, I'll sit down and we'll go through the entire process, because everybody looks at the process in this really crazy big, you know, you have to tackle the world type of situation. Right. And the way that we tackle the process at Garden State, and the way that I've tackled the process when I talk to these people, is I break down the different parts of the process. A lot of people just want to look at it as one process. It's me and a processor. It's really not. You Got have it. To look at it in the aspects of, number one, I need to have an LOA. I need to have a loan originator assistant. Now, if you're the originator who's doing 300 units a month, I mean 300 units a year, that's an easy one. You should mm-hmm. have an LOA. You should have somebody that is doing your sales assistant. Now, mm-hmm. understand, LOA should be a sales assistant, not a processing and fulfillment assistant. The next person I look at in that ecosystem is, like, you know, basically you take that processor role as it stands today, and you break it up into three roles. And the three roles are going to be, number one, is you're going to have a loan coordinator. Number two, you're going to have what I call is a pre-underwriter.
And this is what the new age processor should be doing. They should be breaking down into different roles. That's what you're saying. Okay.
I think the future is this. Is it really is three positions. It's a loan coordinator who handles the front end of the process. That's kind of your setup person. And by setup, I mean, you know, they're going to review your application, make sure all the data is correctly entered, make sure everything that is on the application matches the documentation. Mm-hmm. They're going to register the loan. They're going to lock the loan. They're going to send the disclosures. They're going to order the appraisal, order the title. They're doing that front end of the process.
Second set of eyes, another review before it's going in.
That's okay. Right. So it's really the first set of eyes, because I look at it and say, as the LO, you need to get out of the pipeline management. This is all kind of administrative is mm-hmm. the way I look at it.
You got to be selling.
You got to be selling.
And
you
have advising.
To
focus
on, that's right. You have to be focusing on the building more clients. So many loan originators that I talk to will tell me, I have 5 realtors. I have 6 realtors. Mm-hmm. I have this many referral sources, but they're not growing. They stop hunting. They basically get to a certain point where their focus is maintaining versus mm-hmm. growing. So this ecosystem is really focused on building a team, spending the same amount of money that you spend today, but spending it wiser. So, you know, you go out and get a loan coordinator, you break that position down to this front end of the process. And this is a job that, you know, you essentially hire and you grab somebody either out of college or with a low level of experience, and you pay them $30,000 to $40,000 a year with very, you know, small incentives.
So you're saying maybe someone without experience is a great spot for this.
Personality
exactly right. Matters, all that good stuff, but really people get in that trap of hiring someone that's been in the business 30 years or something, not saying they're not good, but that's where you're seeing things going.
Well, you know what I see? I see you have to invest in the future of your business. And like right now, you'll get processors that are holding companies or holding LOs captive because, you know, if you're an LO and you have one processor, well, you're depending upon that one person for your whole system. And, and you know, the truth is the process is not that complicated. I mean, if you look at companies like UWM and Quicken, the way they've built their businesses is on systems, and they just manufacture people, and they don't train them on the whole thing. They train them on a piece of the process. So for me, the loan coordinator is that setup person. It's the first part of the process. And I'm not saying you're going to hire somebody right out of college that's going to be able to do that job day one, but I do think that's a job that you can, with the proper investment of time and energy, you can have this person up and running within 3 to 6 months and owning that front end
because
process.
Of the tools that are out there right now. It's not like it was 15 years ago.
That's
you
right.
know, with technology. Got you.
Think about it. I mean, just in the time from the last time I was, you know, at Garden State Home Loans now, registering a loan has improved massively with, mm-hmm. with smart fees. You know, that alone is an area that we would sit there and spend all this time entering data related to fees. Now you don't have to do mm-hmm. it. So like this front end position, again, it's a basic entry level position. You keep it simple. They're not underwriting the file. They're just reviewing a document checklist. They're identifying what's been collected, what's outstanding.
Got it.
Registering the loan, running AUS.
Okay.
The middle position is your pre-underwriter. This is the most important, most experienced person. That's the one that's reviewing the file as if they're an underwriter before the loan ever goes into underwriting. So they're going to do a full review. They're going to make sure that when that loan comes out of underwriting, that everything that was requested on the AUS findings is received. They're going to make sure that any large deposits have been mm-hmm. documented. Like they are really kind of like making sure that file comes out and everything that the underwriter requests is already been predicted.
Cool.
And the last person's really, you know, I'm going to call them a processor, but they're truly kind of a closer because when they get that file, they're only going to have a couple conditions on it because the pre-underwriter and the loan coordinator did such a good job packaging that file that, you know, when the processor or this closer gets the file at the very end, they're scheduling the closing, they're working with the title company, getting them invoices, mm-hmm. doing the post-closing QC, stacking that file for compliance. But here you are again in that last position. You've made that such a simplified position that again, that's a $30,000 to $40,000 a year position.
Got it.
And more than anything, when I look at this situation, where you want to be is the more and more time that these people are in your ecosystem and the more time that they're spending under the pre-underwriter, mm-hmm. the more they're learning, the more their expertise levels are rising. So the loan coordinator will eventually become a pre-underwriter. The processor might eventually become your operations person or your compliance person. But too often people don't want to make the investment that they know they have to make. They know what their problem is. They'll come to me and they'll say, I'm frustrated that I'm captive to my contract processor or my processor. I'm frustrated that my LOs don't follow up with leads or don't follow up on the refis that they should be getting. And I say, you have to understand that you can't change behavior. They are who they are. So what you have to do is build a support mm-hmm. system that either empowers them to do what they do best or make sure that you don't let these things fall through the cracks anymore. So when I look at this system, what you're doing is you're creating a more efficient model. If a processor or the pre-underwriter decide to take off one day, your whole company's not shutting down because one person took a vacation. Mm-hmm. And on the sales side of things, again, loan originators that focus on referral business from real estate agents are not going to be the ones sitting on a phone all day calling.
Can't do it.
Leads.
You're going to burn out.
That's right. That's right. You got to spend wiser. And I think what it comes down to is there's this misconception that the LO wants to make 100% of the gross or as much of the gross as possible. Mm-hmm. They do with the supporting structure. And I think, you know, when I talk about the LO that I talked to last week that had come here that's doing a couple hundred units a year, you know, that LO came to me and said, I'm only getting, you know, 125 basis points of the overall, let's say 275 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy with that. They were happy with that, except for the fact that, you know, they're making all this money, but they're burning out.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, you're making 125 of the 275 basis points, but what you need to do is you need to go back to your broker owner and you need to talk about how can the economics mm-hmm. better support a system that allows them to keep originating and not burning mm-hmm. out. And again, these are conversations everybody's scared to have them, but the truth of the matter is you got to have them. I mean, because you can't wait till you burn out, because once you're burned out, it's that same old conversation. Oh, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, before you ever get to that point of being broken, you need to talk to your team. And you need to talk internally and just identify, like, how do we go about let's start with number one, an LOA. Let's start mm-hmm. with a loan coordinator. How do we start building out our team for the future? Because the companies that are winning today are not the companies that have the old business model. The companies that have today that are winning are, like I said, UWM, Quicken Loans. Think about these models. It's their ability to manufacture people and do volume mm-hmm. is all about scale. And I think in our own little way, we can build these teams to do the same exact thing locally.
Yeah, and you can scale. There's different ways of scaling, right? You have the one man woman shop, right? you have, people have different goals, is what I'm saying. So you're getting tons of questions every day. Big one is really, yeah, like you said, people are coming to you with questions and you're like, almost slow down. Let's break it down, because it's really, people are overwhelmed. So that's what you're saying.
You know what it is people, they look at the short-term investment, but not the long-term payoff. That's what it is. So the three big ones that I get are, I know our LOs, and I know we need to be doing better database management. Like, this is a year that we should have refied every customer we did a loan for the previous 2 years, and we know we missed that opportunity, or we didn't capitalize at the level that we should have. Number two is processes. You know, we need better processes. We need more scalable processes.
Got it.
And the third one is recruiting and training, and they all are a reflection of the same issue, which is instead of focusing on experienced processor, what they need to focus on is either a trainer that is training people that they're bringing into their ecosystem to do database management or to be part of their process, or they have to focus on converting a very experienced processor or a very experienced underwriter into a trainer. But having somebody that their entire job is making, is helping you manufacture new people into your system and helping your existing people get better is so important. And a lot of people think, like, I'm just going to do it myself. And I was one of those people for many years. The problem with that is there's only so much time in the day, and you will never be able to, as one person that's trying to originate, manage a business, manage a pipeline of loans, be able to sit there and properly train somebody on how to do their job effectively. So if you have a dedicated person, that's all they're doing is focusing on training your new loan coordinator or your new pre-underwriter or your LOA, if that's all their job is, then the uptime from first day on the job to them being an effective member of your team, it goes from a year of you giving them 5% of your time or 10% of your time to 3 to 6 months of this trainer giving them all of their time. And that to me is the biggest thing that I see is, like, you know, there is a way to build a good scalable business where you don't have to work the way that you're working today. And that's either as an LO or as a broker owner, but you have to invest in people, and you have to invest in people that you're going to mold to be the person that represents you on the front line.
I mean, that's literally me right now. It's almost hypocritical for me to sit here and talk about any of it. Well, I'm asking the questions, but that's me. I mean, I feel it. I mean, that's legit. So it's not just me. Remember, you're not alone. Like, this is the same crap you're getting every day.
That's right. And it's a pain point that a lot of people have, but there's only one way to get out of it, because, you know, for all intents and purposes, people come to me with these questions, and we don't have a solution for it. Ames doesn't have the bandwidth to, you know, support this training at this level. So, you know, for me, what it really comes down to is we're working on creating training materials and videos and things that the local broker can, you know, leverage. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to a decision that's being made, which is, like, I can make, let's just hypothetically say, if you're a broker owner and you're sitting there saying, I can make $200,000 next year.
Yep.
Well, instead of making $200,000, if you go hire that trainer, you might only make, you're making a bet. You're going to pay that person, let's just say, $50,000 to $60,000. Well, now you're taking home $50,000 to $60,000 less. But if that person is now helping you train LOs that you're recruiting about how to originate loans through the lenders that you're working with, or if that person is now helping you train your LOA and your loan coordinator and build out your team, I guarantee you that a year from now, 18 months from now, that bet will be the best bet you ever made. There is no doubt in my mind that the single most important position that a company can have today is a recruiter and a trainer. And that might be one person for some companies, but having somebody that's focused on bringing new people, new talent to your business is so important. Every single company that I'm talking to today is telling me horror stories where they know what the solution is to be a better company. They know what the solution is long-term, or they also are scared about what the long-term is. And they don't want to change what they're doing today because it's working today and it's making money today and they're getting by, even though it's painful. But
it's the old take one step back to go two forward.
Yeah,
that's right. Exactly, you got to make a bet. You got to take a risk. And this is exactly what I'm seeing with the people I'm interviewing. Like, they took a risk, an educated risk. This is why AIM's here.
That's
to help you to motivate you to go take that risk, because you have to reinvest in yourself. I mean, this is common from everyone I've talked to.
And people, you have to understand, managing and developing people is very difficult. So a lot of people mm-hmm. sit there and they say, do I want to put myself through that? Am I going to lose the people? Here's what it comes down to is you can't take anybody for granted. But if you truly want to be in the business of providing the best customer experience, and you want to be in a position where you're not, you know, like I said before, killing yourself working mm-hmm. 100 hours a week, then you have to understand building a team is required. Margins are going to go down. We're selling a commodity. Plain and simple,
yeah,
we're selling a commodity.
Up.
Things are good right now. This year, rates are low, so capacity is high, and everybody's making money. Competition was lower because everybody was so busy that they're not sitting there competing on rate and everything. Mm-hmm. But as rates go up, that competition is going to come back. Margins are going to go down. So in order for you to make what you would have made in 2019, in 2021, you're going to have to work at lower margins. And the truth of the matter is, in order for you to work at lower margins, you have to have systems and processes in place that allow for you to manufacture loans at a lower price point.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, what I look at when I say, okay, I have a loan coordinator, a pre-underwriter, and a processor, and oh yeah, I have a sales assistant. The way I look at that system is I want to be in a situation where if I come across a loan that's only making $500 as a broker owner, or $1,000, mm-hmm. that I can say yes to my loan officer to write that deal, assuming that, you know, LO comp is not an issue in that
Correct.
Equation. And the reason why I want to is because $1,000, if you're able to win an extra 15 deals, an extra 20 deals, and nobody is burning out and you have the capacity for it, that's money that you can be investing in marketing, advertising, in your business in different ways. So like for me, that's where you have to get. And it's if you're in this for the long haul, if you're in this to truly do something that, you know, whether you want to hand it to your kids or you just simply want to build a great long-term business, investing in developing people should be the core part of everything you do. And just because you haven't been doing this way before, doesn't mean you can't do it immediately, you know, going forward.
Yeah. So what you're seeing is, like we talk about database, you know, scaling, recruiting, those are the big questions you're getting. But it's really coming down to looking at your model and taking that risk to take the next step. People are just standing kind of still or scared to take the next spot.
I think the biggest thing people are is they are creatures of habit. Mm-hmm. And really what it comes down to is in order for them to do any of these things, they have to change. And they have to make pretty big changes because it's adjusting their current model. It's adjusting their current philosophies to be able to accommodate and support these different things. And the truth is, when you are a business operator that is, you know, independent, it's easy to get set in your ways. It's easy to mm-hmm. not challenge yourself to do the things that you might know you need to do, mm-hmm. even though you're not doing them. So like for me, the way I look at it is it all starts with one. I'm not telling anybody to go out and hire, you know, a sales assistant, a loan coordinator, right. a pre-underwriter, and a processor today. But if you start off with just an LOA, if you just simply start off and say, hey, I'm going to mm-hmm. hire an LOA, and I'm going to train that person up to be a loan coordinator over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, start somewhere. You know, you can't simply stay, complacent and just think that things are going to work themselves out. You will get older. I see it with myself. I have always worked as hard as I work today, but it's not as easy as it was mm-hmm. 10 years ago or 5 years ago when I was younger. I was able to wake up early without the alarm. Now I need the alarm.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to work till 10 o'clock at night and there'd be no issues. Now I'm sitting there at the end of the night. I'm tired. I'm phased.
You know, man.
So like to me, you have to understand time will catch up with you. And the most optimal time to invest in your business and build your business is right now. And the biggest thing I could tell you is that just because you hire and train somebody doesn't mean that you can always pay them the way that you're going to pay them when you get them you know, at that level. You have to advance them. You have to give them promotions. You have to make sure that the opportunity is there for them to elevate, because it's a different world than it was ever before. There's more competition for people than anything.
That's a really good point for people. I mean, that's what we just talked about, hiring, trying to find the right people to help scale. People know what they have to do, But yeah, it's a race to get the right people.
It is. It's a race to get the right people. But once you get them, just like your customers,
you got to keep.
You have to defend them. You have to be providing a value proposition that they want. And I see it more than ever. Just in our local market, it's, you know, if there's recruiters calling our people constantly, if we're not providing a culture, if we're not providing whether it's health insurance or 401k or any of the things that, you know, you should be doing as an employer, we're going to lose our good people. So, like, to me, it's, you know, part of it is recruiting and developing and training people. And then the back end of it is understanding that culture is so important, because if you don't have a culture where people are happy, guess what? They're gonna leave you. And I think that's one of the common things I do get questions on now, that, you know, I'll have a broker come to me and say, well, you know, Anthony, I'm a 3-man shop and I just lost my top guy. He started his own brokerage. And what I try to tell them is this, is you have to understand that you're not entitled to people. Like, you just have to. I mean, like, we went through this phase of our business at Garden State where early on we were sitting there and we would lose one or two of our top people at any given time. And we would sit there and
it hurts, know, right?
But we would be upset. We took it very emotionally, because you're a small business operator and you're reacting emotionally to it. You're upset with them. They betrayed you. Blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, you got to take a step back and you got to say, well, at some point you betrayed somebody too, right? I mean, at some point I went from working for somebody 100%. To starting my own company. So this assumption that I'm entitled to you because I was your broker owner. Come on, guys. Ooh. We got to wake up. We got to understand that's not the game. The game is every day, just like that LO sitting there competing for business every day, they're competing for customers or realtors. As the broker owner, you got to be competing for them. And that's the way I run my business here at AIM as well. Every day I look at it and say, I got major, major corporations in my market. I got Comcast. I got Vanguard. These are billion-dollar corporations. I know I have good people, so I have to make sure I'm competing for them every day, providing them with value propositions or lunch or this, whatever, to make them feel like this is the best place for them. And as you, as a broker owner, you got to look at the same thing and make sure you're doing that, you're bringing value to them. And a broker owner might say, well, you know, I gave them this deal and they get X amount of the gross. It's not worth it for me to invest time in them. Well, then don't make a bad deal. You know what I mean? Make sure that when you're in business to make money. So if you want to hire a loan officer and you want to give them basically 90% of the revenue and you're just getting a slither, well, you got to make sure you're setting the expectation in your own mind at that point to understand that there's no money left over for a value proposition to be created. You're literally making nothing to support that loan originator. You have to be in a position where you identify how do I want to support my employees? As a broker owner, do I want to provide the benefits and the health and the 401k? Do I want to provide processing? Do I want to have a Christmas party? Do I want to have, like, all these things, these culture building things, or these things that make the relationship stickier? Because the truth is that a lot of people sit there and say, well, LOs just want the most payout wise. That's not true. How do I know that? Because right now, statistically, broker market share has basically 18% of the market. Retail LOs, that makes up 54% of the market. So 54% of the LOs in this country are in retail. Guess what? When you're retail, you are not a broker owner. You're not getting 100% of the gross. Nope. You're getting, if you're lucky, 20 to 25%, whether, you know, hey, my payout's 125 basis points. Well, the average retail lender is making 400 to 500 basis points. So why are they willing to sacrifice when they could be a broker? Well, because they got benefits, they got stability, they have a HR department, they have a sales manager that helps motivate them, they got a trainer that helps them teach new products, they have President's Club, they got this, they got culture, they got all this stuff.
They do well with culture.
They do well right? with the whole, well, you know what they do well with? Business. That's what they do well. They have evolved businesses. And as most broker owners, you know, when you walk into their office, you'll talk to them about these things and they'll say, well, we don't have that, we don't do this. And that's what I'm trying to say right now, is when I talk about this whole concept of hiring an LOA and a loan coordinator, a pre-underwriter and a processor and a trainer, is what I'm talking about is building a business, is building a sustainable business, so that when an LO comes to you and you sit there and say, hey, this is our process, this is how we're going to support you, you don't have to compete on paying them the highest percentage of the revenue, you have to compete on culture. You're competing on something else. And now they're going to sit there and say, the person that's going to come work for your company might not be the same person that would come work for it today.
Yeah, there's a sweet spot, right? With margins, is there an average margin? I mean, there's everybody's different, well, obviously.
In the broker channel, I would say it's all over the place. But the companies that really have stable volume every year, that have a business model that, whether it's purchase or refi market, whether rates are low or high, that are the most stable,
they're consistent,
tend to be the ones that have infrastructure in place. You know, we have, you know, a guy like Shelby, he talked about, they have processors and they have assistants and they have a marketing department. You know, that's part of their value proposition. So that's the biggest area that I'm trying to influence younger broker owners and existing broker owners when they ask me about these things, is you got to make a choice. And if you want to be the company you are today and you're not willing to change, well, don't, you know, basically don't bitch about it. You just have to kind of take that you are who you are and you're not willing to do what's necessary to change. But we went through this process at Garden State Home Loans, and like, we literally went from the company we were to the company they are today by having some really hard changes. And we changed comp plans on LOs. We hired a lot of new people and we had to train them. It was a really, really tough year when we went through that process. But when we got through it, we were a scalable company. We were a company that, instead of being limited at 80 to 90 units a month, we became a company that could do 300 to 400 units a month. And from an overall balance standpoint, we had a more stable company, a company that when there was a banking examination or an auditor came in, we had people that could be dedicated to spend time on that. When our employees had questions about benefits, we had somebody that can manage that and answer their questions. So, you know, it's just kind of developing a long-term business, and that's what we talked about.
So I spoke with Chris Pell last week, right, of Garden State, the COO, right? And he said, I forget the exact year, but he said 1 year they did 330 loans around that, and it was hell.
Yeah.
And then the following year, there were systems put in place. The same month, the following year, they did around the same amount of units, but his life was great.
Yeah.
And so that's an example, a legit example.
I would say this is like, we basically had the example that I think he was talking about is in Q1 of, let's just say, 2016 versus 2017 or 2015 versus 2016. We sat there, and I remember going over the data with the team and being like, hey, we were up 30% this year. But all my team members, my loan coordinator, my pre-underwriters, and my processors were all pulling me aside. And they were like coming up to me and saying, Anthony, you know, I feel really slow.
Yeah.
They'd be like, you know, I feel bad that I have to leave at 5 o'clock. You know, is everything okay? And I'd be like, guys, we're up 30% this year. The reason you feel slow is we develop these processes. We put technology in place. We implemented systems. So what used to be volume that was very taxing and difficult was actually very easy. And you know, the only thing I can compare it to as an LO is, you know, process alone with Provident and process alone with UWM.
Yeah, right.
It's like a night and day experience. Why? Because UWM invested in these people in their process. You know, you got your setup team, you got your underwriters, and you got your junior underwriters, and they have Prono. Yep. They got all these people doing all these different things to make it easier on their clients, to make it easier on brokers. Provident doesn't. So their brokers are feeling a very taxing experience. Same thing with us. You know, we looked at our situation and said, we have two clients. Our LO's client is the consumer. Our LO's client is the real estate agent. Our client is the LO. So it was our job, and the processors as well, because we want to make sure that the back end people are having good life balance and all that good stuff. But you know, that's why we implemented those processes. That's why we added more people, got more horizontal, and kind of made the jobs more granular. You know, people were specific experts at reviewing income and reviewing assets. And again, I know, you know, it's for some, if you're the one-man LO or two-man broker-owner situation today, you might be looking at this as some overwhelmingly daunting task. You understand, this is a long-term development. Mm-hmm. You start with one hire. I'm going to hire an LOA. I'm going to hire a processing assistant. Start developing somebody. It doesn't have to be the $50,000 to $60,000 a year pre-underwriter. You could start with a lower-level position. But in my experience, anytime that I hired an LOA or a processing assistant or somebody that was helping on one end of the business, they always paid for themselves.
Cool. All right. So that one man, the two man shop right now, brokerage, talking about goal setting, right? What's a couple things you can tell everyone to maybe start doing or where to dive deep?
I would
start for 2020.
So where I would start is this: is, you know, I know how complicated, I know how tough and overwhelming it can be for somebody that doesn't have experience in certain areas too, when they think about things like CRM. When LOs think about CRM, it's like, what? I mean, that's like this huge thing, and they're like, it's overwhelming. And it can be, because a lot of these CRMs are not built for the smaller broker owner.
It's the one you use, right?
Exactly. So for me, the number one thing I would say is, let's focus on adopting one piece of technology or two pieces of technology mm-hmm. that help me and that help me get my brand out there, help me grow my business. So the first one I would tell somebody is, it doesn't matter if you're an LO or broker owner, you should be using Homebot. Homebot is mm-hmm. absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, you upload your customer data in it. It is a set it and forget it tool. It will drive engagement back to you. You don't need a CRM. You don't need anything connected to it. All you do is upload your client's data into this database, and it will drive engagement. It will create customers for you. You will be overwhelmed in whatever rate environment how this is going to drive engagement for you. So to me, that's my CRM.
And okay? I have that, and it works, and it got us a bunch of extra refis because we didn't have the time, because I'm in the growth mode, so I'm running like crazy. That really does help. It's legit. I use it. And for your realtor partners, that's an easy pitch. And because it works. I have a couple we're working on now.
That's right. So Homebot's number one now. So we're gonna talk about goals in a second, but I'm just mm-hmm. gonna talk about some things that are easy things to implement okay. that can help you grow your business. So Homebot's number one. Mm-hmm. The second thing is we're by the time anybody hears this, we're going to be announcing a partnership with a company that formerly known as Agentology that's now called Verse.
Okay.
And basically what this company does is they provide essentially a call center on demand for your one-man LO. So, you know, if you have leads come in through Homebot, if you have those trigger leads or those payoff notification leads that some lenders give you, they will call up to 200 customers at a very high volume per month. So if you want to have them do database management, if you want to have them follow up on leads that came through that you weren't able to get through to, mm-hmm. if you want to have them follow up on people that your realtors referred to you for pre-approvals, they will call on demand for you. Now, cool. that is a service that if you're not going to hire an LOA. So like to me, that's the LOA alternative. You're paying a monthly fee. It's much cheaper than hiring a full-time person. But having, you know, Homebot and having some type of mechanism to do your database management or calling your leads is really important.
These are easy, not plug and play, but almost to kind of get you off on the right step, right? Yeah, on the foot.
These are things that you should have no matter what.
Okay, got it.
So the next thing is this. Is assuming you have this in place, now let's talk about goals. Your goals need to be focused on purchase, because at the end of the day, no matter who you are, reality is reality, which mm-hmm. is as rates go up, refinance business is going to go away. And there's no doubt in my mind that we have at least, you know, 6 to 9 months where we're going to see rates very favorable because mm-hmm. it's an election year. So, you know, at least through the election, I expect the rate environment to be very favorable to refi. But by the end of the year and by Q1 of next year, you should expect to see rates go up. And when they do, that means refi volume is going to dry up. And a lot of people are too focused on refi. Again, you mm-hmm. should be doing both. You should have your dedicated people that are doing your database management, doing refi business. But you should also be very focused on the purchase business. That's the long-term sustainable play. So where I would be focusing my time and energy on is on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, how am I identifying a strategy that that allows me to get in front of more realtors? So the first thing I'm doing is this, is on every single purchase contract I get, I am now looking at that contract as I have two clients on the contract. Yep. I have the buyer's agent mm-hmm. and I have the seller's agent. And guess what? I got one other person that's involved in this transaction that a lot of mortgage people don't understand the role. The most important person in the real estate side of the transaction mm-hmm. is the transaction coordinator.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a part that a lot of people don't understand is the buyer's agent is out running around doing their thing, sort of like loan officer. They're out dealing with customers, prospecting, relationship management. The processor in the office is the one that's handling the tough mm-hmm. work of getting the deal done. Same thing with the transaction coordinator. They are the ones that are reporting back to the agent and saying, hey, this guy's a good guy, this guy's a bad guy, this mortgage guy was dismissive, he hung up on me. And when you're not looking at them as your client, they're going to report back to your buyer's agent or the seller's
agent.
That's
like the LOA on the mortgage side, the setup person, right? Okay.
That's exactly right. They manage, I mean, to be honest with you, once the contract gets passed, once the contract gets signed and is out of attorney review, that's the one that's managing the entire transaction on behalf of the realtor. That's mm-hmm. they're setting up the inspections, they're setting up the appraisal, they're checking on the mortgage commitment. So like you really have to look at and say on every transaction, you got a buyer's agent, you got a seller's mm-hmm. agent, each of those agents have a transaction coordinator, and you want to be doing everything you can do to connect with them on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have templated emails that are checking with them. Hey, just wanted to let you know the appraisal came in and the value is good. Or want to let you know that the loan approval for the buyer got done.
Mm-hmm.
You want to look at them as your clients.
That's the emotional one. That's the one that's going to get back to the ones running the business, like that, we were saying, that aren't in it. Yeah.
That's the one that's going to sit there and that's the one where you're going to get the service. Your service is going to bleed through to the agent. So mm-hmm. the customer, you're going to do a great job for them no matter what. But the customer is not going to always run back to the realtor and say, man, I got the best mortgage guy in the business, because they don't have anything to compare it to. Most of these people are first-time home buyers.
Point.
The transaction coordinator does have something to compare it to, because all they deal with is the mortgage guy on all these different transactions. If you can stand out to them and you become the guy that they compare stuff to, like, man, that guy over at Garden State Home Loans, that guy, it's JP Hussey, his team, man, they mm-hmm. are on point. They call me. The minute that appraisal was done, he called me and told me it came in at value and things mm-hmm. are good. Oh, you know, the minute that loan was clear to close, he reached out to me and said, hey, listen, I'm going to put you on an email with the title mm-hmm. company. Hey, you know, every single time he beat me to the punch, he was on top of it. So, again, you know, people don't think about this because people are so focused on what they're doing and not focused on the big picture. And for mm-hmm. me, I just look at it and say, when I would sit down with realtors and I would say, hey, explain to me your process, walk me through start to finish your process. And I was like, wait, who the heck is this transaction coordinator? They do everything. I was like, you realtor, they open the doors, yeah. they share the houses, they do all that part. But once it got past contract, I realized that 70-80% of the actual work that happens past the point of contract was happening by this transaction coordinator. So you want to be showing off. You want to be focusing on the buyer's agent, the seller's agent, the transaction coordinator.
Got it.
So organically, if you're getting 3 to 4 contracts a month or 5 to 10 contracts a month, on every one of those deals, you got one buyer's agent, one buyer's transaction coordinator, one seller's agent, one seller's transaction coordinator. Those are all referral sources.
Got it.
Then you want to be focusing on a monthly basis, how am I prospecting agents in my market organically. So the way I look at this is the number one way I would approach is how many appointments can I actually handle? So on Mondays, on Tuesdays, mm-hmm. I would be putting in a call to one realtor or two realtors in every office that in the previous month I closed a loan for, a buyer's agent or a seller's agent, because I can sit there and say, hey, I closed a loan for this agent. Mm-hmm. Ask them about
it's not
me.
A cold call.
It's not a cold call.
It's a layup kind of.
It's hey, I know you're in this office.
Yep.
I know you work with this mortgage guy, but I just want to let you know I closed a loan for somebody in your office last month. Here's who they are. They can validate that I do a good job. We have this mm-hmm. product array. I'd love to meet you and talk to you about it. Great. They might say no. They might stiff you. But if you're not calling, if you're not asking, you're not developing the relationship. So I personally would say you want to figure out what you're comfortable with. I mean, listen, if you're calling 0 agents proactively weekly right now, which a lot of mortgage people mm-hmm. are not proactively calling agents, then let's just start slow. Let's just start with 10 a week. You're going to call 2 per day, okay? Let's just start with that and get more comfortable with it, because just like anything, you have to get more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
But just understand, you have to have a value proposition that creates value for them. So you want to talk about, hey, how can I help you get more referrals? What are you not doing that I'm doing that can help you? Are you using HomeBot? Like, because that's a tool for realtors mm-hmm. and for mortgage people. So talk to them. Don't think you have to talk about the customer experience. Don't think you have to talk to them about having the yep. lowest rates or the best service. You have to understand what they care about when they look at you is somebody that can help them have a better business and be more optimized. So for me, for the goal setting, it's let's go ahead and identify X number of realtors that you currently don't have a relationship with or don't have a direct path of communication with that you're going to call on a weekly basis. Second thing, managing your real estate agents like it's either your like they're a customer database. Mm-hmm. So like I said, buyer's agent, buyer's transaction agent, seller's agent, seller's transaction agent, you should look them as clients moving forward. And every single, while you're going through the transaction, you're providing a high touch. Once the transaction closes, you should be reaching out to them, asking them how you did, asking them if they would use you in the future. And if, just like in anything, if you do a good job and you say, hey, would you use us in the future if based upon your experience with us, they're going to say yes.
Yeah.
And when they say yes, you know what's going to happen? Now it's going to say, hey, well, since you would, let's talk. Let me come in. I know you already have mortgage guys. All I want to do is have the opportunity to show you that the experience that we provide that buyer, that seller, and that transaction is the experience that we provide every single time.
And this isn't rocket science. I mean, what's what we're talking about? Some simple goals to pop off in 2020. If you're overwhelmed right now and don't know where you're going, some easy things are HomeBot, maybe Verse when that comes out. But then concentrating on purchase, like you said, setting up for the long term. Focusing on purchase, and then, like you said, you're not cold calling.
You're not
taking what you've already done. Like these are easy things to pop off.
It's a numbers game. If you talk to 10 agents a week, that is, I mean, realistically speaking, you're talking about 40 agents a month. If only one of them says yes to you, only one.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the year, you have 12 new agents. Okay, and if 12 new agents are sending you a deal a month or a deal a quarter. You're talking about adding a lot of volume right away to your business. And again, it goes back to that whole thing when people come to me and they say, you know, this is what I'm doing. I have top brokers in the country that come to me and they talk about what they're doing today. And they talk about what they want to do or what, you know, hey, I don't want to be work until 10 o'clock every night. Or, you know, I know I need to be doing a better job at database management.
Mm-hmm.
We'll sit there and we'll talk through it. And we'll put together a playbook and I'll show them how to resolve their issue. In this case, I'm telling you how to resolve your issue. You want to achieve bigger numbers. Yeah. You want to have bigger goals. It starts with 10 cold calls to agents, okay? And it, again, not cold calls, but these are agents that are in the same office. Connect with them on LinkedIn. Connect with them on Facebook. You got to put in the work.
Yep.
You got to make the calls. And also, from a perspective of your own self, I think you have to look at and say, what are your competitors doing in your market, the guys that have the most real estate agents? What are they doing that you're not doing? Or what are they doing that, you know, has allowed them to have all these agents? And when I've really dissected it, you know, I know there's some bad guys out there that do MSAs and do all that, you know, the kickbacks on stuff. There's actually fewer out there doing that than a lot of people suspect. A lot of people look at a top LO and they're like, oh, he must be doing this. Or he must be doing that.
It's not happening as much as you think.
I mean, let's be realistic. We're in a compliant world these days. So what they are doing is they're more engaged. They are, whether it's coaching their real estate agents on how to use social media, whether it's bringing systems to help their real estate agents, adopt HomeBot or adopt Agentology, whether it's doing trainings on 203Ks or niche products. It's putting in the effort to provide some type of value to the realtor. And even if it's the realtor packaging it and extending it to their clients, supporting them as they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, I just look at this and say, you have to both inwardly and outwardly look at your business model and see how you can adjust to be a better operator.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from a lot of LOs that I see today, are you doing your reputation management? Are you calling your agents? Are you calling new agents on a regular basis? Are you getting reviews? When I say reputation management, are you making sure you're getting reviews? You should be getting reviews both from real estate agents and every transaction and the customer every single time. And it shouldn't just be Zillow. You should go with a social survey or a Podium, one of these companies that has, you know, it's posting the same review in multiple places. But understand that you want to get reviews from both real estate agents and consumers. And the last thing is understand that perception does matter. Making sure that you're you know, that you are in the local magazine in your area, making sure that you're doing interviews or doing podcasts or doing things that make you look bigger than you are. I mean, like, the truth of the matter is somebody might look at, you know, I see these guys on social media all the time. They're doing these things that, you know, hey, I'm hosting a panel of realtors at my office and we're doing a Q&A with them and it's this expert session. It doesn't take much to organize these things, but perceptionally, when you see that on social media, you're like, wow, this guy's making moves. This guy's making big things happen. Yeah. But what's it take to get a, put a camera, an iPhone on a phone stand, get three people to sit down in chairs and have somebody with a microphone ask them questions? It doesn't take a lot, but perceptionally, it's like, man, look at this production that's going on. It's not a production. It's a customer acquisition.
This
it's
is a
brand
production.
Awareness. This is a real Ricky production. We got Ricky over here. We just woke him up when we said his name.
Wake up, Ricky.
This is a real production. But seriously,
many tools is what you're saying that you can do. You can jump off quick.
But
if you want.
It starts with stepping out of your comfort zone, like bringing that awareness and being out there. We see it on time. Look at, you know, we see guys on social media. They're just always they're recording videos and posting them. Like Gary Vee says, it's like create content, but know who your audience is. Mortgage people, your audience, you are not Quicken Loans. You are not direct to consumer. Mm-hmm. You never will be that. What you are is in your leader, you're that homeownership advisor. So like your audience is everybody that's in your network, your network, your, what do they call it? Your sphere of influence and all the realtors in your network. And that's why you post those videos, but don't talk about mortgages. Just like Gary Vee said, he's like, talk about, you know, things are going on in your community. The guy that's driving around your neighborhood going 80 in a 20. I'm that guy.
Is that
guy.
You?
Yes. Oh, yeah. talk about the things that get engagement. And guess what? When somebody gets to, you know, likes you and, you know, goes back and forth with you because they want to yell at the guy who's driving 80 in your neighborhood, they recognize who you are. Then they start following you. Then they're looking at your social post about you being a mortgage person. But bring your personal content, bring your personality out, and you know, understand that your focus is not the whole world like Quicken Loans. Your focus is your community, how you can drive engagement to your local agents, to your local consumers, to your community, and bring value to them in more ways than just being a mortgage advisor.
Cool. All right, let's transition here, if you will. AIM, right? AIM's still a young company.
Yep.
How many years? How long has it been? It feels forever, right?
It feels like a long time, my man. But in March, it'll be 2 years.
Okay.
So we're just under 2 years. And, you know, I would kind of compare AIM to most mortgage brokerages. We spent the first year killing ourselves, like literally working around the clock. I had a very small team here. You know, we're event managers, we're marketing, we're compliant, we're doing anything we need to do. We're picking up phone calls from brokers at any time of the day. We're doing anything we could do to help support them and, you know, in any way we can bring value to them. And then, you know, I sort of made a move this year where I said, you know what, in order for me to support 40,000 people, I'm getting 300 to 400 inquiries.
Is that about how many brokers
every
were
day reaching out to us? Wow. Every single day. I can't even, like, we really, you know, we just couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
So I made the same decision that, you know, that I'm talking about here, which is I said, if I'm going to do this, I got to invest in the future. And it might be painful for 2019. It might be painful for 2020, but I got to develop a team because I can't do this with 4 to 5 people. I need to have a team of 20, 30 people. And that's exactly what we've been building here, especially in the second half of the year. We went from, you know, a half a dozen people to 10 to 12. Now we're, you know, at close to 25 people. And you know, we're teaching them the business. We're teaching them not the transactional part of the business, but we're teaching them how we need to support our members. And it's slowly starting to pay off.
Just since I've been doing this the past month or so, I've seen 3 or 4 new hires. So this is legit. I mean, you're doing what you say.
Yeah,
and that's, you know,
and it's a process. You know, there's times where the conversations, like, again, you know, I don't assume anything. Every single time we set out a project or basically anything that I know that team members of my team are not subject matter experts. So I always say, I need to be the last eyes on this. I need to see this.
Okay.
So I empower them with, you know, making the, you know, handling how they're building, whether it's creatives or PR or whatever, but I got to see it at the end. So I could say, hey, you know, we didn't hit the target here. We're not representing our members correctly, or we're not, you know, describing things the way we need to describe them.
Right.
And when we go through that, they learn, you know, I tell them the why behind everything. But it is a process, but I'm more optimistic than ever because we are, you know, think about the last 3 to 4 months. We've launched Broker to Broker podcast. We started hosting, a half dozen brokers per week in our office. We're in the process of building out a training platform for our members. We're in the process of building out a member portal for our members. Like the amount of things that we're doing just in the last 90 days that are going to, you know, come out in the market in 2020 for our members. We launched government affairs. We never had that before. Now we have a whole government affairs. We have lobbying efforts. We have government affairs advisory council. We'll be doing webinars for our members on that front. So this has all happened as a result of us investing in the people and bringing them up to speed and getting them to a point where they can handle managing these things on their own. And even for me, when it comes to my own bandwidth, you know, I'm one of those people where I know how many things we need to accomplish and how many things that we need to do for brokers because they've been so underserved for so long. So I can just keep adding more on. But the ability to now take things off and have it go onto somebody else's plate because they can manage it has been such a big deal.
Well, it's like a mortgage, like you said.
That's right.
You grew a mortgage company. You're doing this. Running a mortgage company is a business. So you can take other models outside of mortgage and run it in your own little spot, right?
That's right. That's the underlying thing I'm trying to get at is that it's a business. So whether you're building what I'm building right now, which is an association to support mortgage brokers, or you're building a mortgage brokerage, it's the same thing. You need, you know, there's different processes of who's doing these different things. So in a mortgage company, you're processing loans. You're doing marketing, you're doing customer acquisition, you're the salespeople. In what we're doing, we have to do things very differently. We have project managers, we're creating creative content, we're creating training materials, we're training PR. So we're doing different things, but the manufacturing process behind the scenes, the whole systems that we're putting in place, it's the same thing.
It's a lot of the same things. Yeah.
Tommy is, he's the project manager. Betty is the creative person. Like we literally go through these processes, and we spend a lot of time looking at our processes, seeing if we have bottlenecks, seeing if we are communicating properly. And just to give you an idea, we implemented one process in the third quarter of this year. And the fourth quarter, we redid it completely. We changed the entire way we did it. And if this process doesn't work out or if we have to make adjustments, we'll do it again. Because the goal is, how do we make it the best possible process for us to create the results that we're trying to create with providing balance to our employees, with providing a level of transparency and communication from our brokers to our team members, to our sponsors, that everybody is on the same page and everybody's supporting the same mission. So we don't want to lose the startup feel or the grassroots feel that we had when we got started.
That's cool.
It's
a puzzle, man. And being at the top, I mean, you're putting in a lot of hours yourself. I mean, let's be realistic. Everyone wants to know, do you sleep in your suit? Have you ever slept in your suit and woke up?
I have slept in my suit, but for the most part, I don't sleep in my suit. For the most part,
I had to ask the question. Yeah. Everybody out there wants to know if you.
Yeah, I'm getting better at some of this, I don't want to say work-life balance, because really work is such a big part of everything.
Everything's
I do.
Mixed, yeah. I mean, it's a lifestyle business.
It's a lifestyle business, especially at this level where the more you make yourself available, the more people are going to, contact you. So, you know, but I will say that the next phase of our growth at AIM is we're putting together a team that's going to be more broker facing. We call it like a broker engagement team. And to a degree, think of it like, you know, a hybrid of like an account executive and, you know, sort of like a consultant where, you know, all the knowledge that I'm able to have a conversation with the broker about, I want to be able to make it more scalable. You know, that's why we're doing a training platform. That's why we're building this engagement team out, is we want to be in a position where I only got so many hours in the day. I can only have so many conversations. But if I have a team of 10 or 15 or 20 engagement representatives mm-hmm. that know exactly the way I'm going to respond to everything, then they can have that conversation. So we want to try to, you know, communicate to more people and help more people on a regular basis. And again, you know, when I think about going to hire those engagement people, it's a process. You got to teach them, you got to coach them up. And I really am at this point, because we don't have a trainer, because I haven't invested in one.
Well, listening to you and spending time here, I mean, you have the same anxiety that someone trying to scale their mortgage business is having, because you're in the same boat. You're scaling AIM.
That's right.
So
that's right.
What you're teaching to everyone out there, you're going through it as well.
But the only difference is, for when you're building your mortgage brokerage, you're starting with, you know, zero clients, and mm-hmm. you're getting to 10 clients, to 15 clients, 20 clients. You're building your business up.
Yep.
Okay. It's very rare that you're in a situation where you start with 10, 15, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000.
Yeah, that's like a good point.
Like we right now, you know, we might have 40,000 members, but we got 10 to 15 or 20,000 that are massively engaged and they're reaching out to us with regularity. So we've had to build our business in reverse, like starting and like supporting those people versus like building up from the ground mm-hmm. zero. So it's a great opportunity, because it, you know, for me, you know, I understand it, you know, that these people trust, they trust me, they trust our the people in our organization to do right by them. So mm-hmm. it's a big responsibility. But at the same time, I also know that like it's not strike while the iron's hot. It's we got to deliver results constantly. And that's the biggest thing is I talked to my team about, we need to transition from 2019 to 2020. Everything needs to be tangible results. We need to be in a position where our brokers come to an event. They need to come away with something that is not high level motivation. It's not, you know, oh, I heard that guy mm-hmm. talk about how they built their business. I want people to be able to be like, okay, I can go implement this. I can go, I learned something today. I actually achieved something today that I can go put in my business. I know the path. They gave me the playbook. So that's really where we want to be, and that's where we're going to be. And we're going to be, again, I think when everybody looks at AIM at the end of 2020, what they're going to see is the goals that we had, which is communicate with more members, mm-hmm. touch more members, with a higher frequency, whether it's trainings in Philadelphia, us going to more cities and more states, us having bigger audiences at our events. When it comes to the tools and partnerships and the things that we're going to provide to the market, we're going to be doing that in a very greater way than mm-hmm. we have in the past. We're very focused on bringing customized tools. We go to companies, we tell them who our members are, we tell them who our audience is, and we critique everything start to finish. We need to make sure the solutions are set up for the one-man shop to be able to set it up and implement in their business in a very low-touch manner. And the last thing is, we have to be in a position where government affairs, mm. PR, that more consumers, more government officials, more real estate agents understand that by working with an independent mortgage broker, they're going to get the best deal, they're going to get the best guidance, and they're going to build the strongest communities, because you're going to have educated homeowners. So that is the last part of it, and that's cool. All part of our goals.
All right, so we have like 5 minutes. I mean, it's been 50 minutes already. Isn't that crazy? Right? That's what it flies. What do you got? One or two things you can tell the broker, whatever you want to tell them right here.
So here, for 2020. Here's what I want to tell you is, number one, don't get focused or don't get lost in the overwhelmingness of you know, trying to do it all, and that's what you have to understand is, it's there's so many things that, you know, there's a good part of being isolated, and there's a bad part of there's a bad part of it mm-hmm. as well. This, on the reverse side, when you open your ears and your eyes to too many things, there's a good part of that and there's a bad part of that. You can see a lot, but you can also see too much. And what I would tell you is keep it simple. You don't have to do it all at once. You can start with something very simple. You don't have to hire 10 million people. You can start with an LOA. You don't have to go adopt 10 pieces of technology. You could start with something very simple. Be self-aware, but the key is just getting started with something. If you know you have a weakness, you have to figure out how to address mm-hmm. it. So I just look at it and I say, don't people that try to do too much can get discouraged very easily. Focus on one or two things at a time that you can execute on that are not too overwhelming. Whether it's calling those real estate agents like I mentioned, mm-hmm. whether it's getting set up with HomeBot, pick one a month, pick two a month, but keep it very simple. You don't have to overwhelm yourself. Number two, understand that the most important thing you can do is take care of yourself and take care of your family. You are not going to be able to replace yourself, and you're not going to be able to replace your wife and your children. Mm-hmm. So you have to be in a position where you understand that, like, if you don't, you know, it's hard to walk away from money, but if you're not hiring and training and you're just going to depend on yourself, well, you're not going to have a family if you're working 24/7. So you heard Shelby, you heard Peter, you heard some of the best LOs out there. When they made that point in their lives where they start to focus on work-life balance, it really saved their businesses because they were able to scale their business as a result of it, but it also saved their families. So, like, for me, the big piece of advice I would have there is the reason why I focus on investing in your business and building teams and hiring and training people is because I know ultimately that is the key to scalability, and ultimately that is the key to work-life balance. So, you know, there's certain people that are out there that will say, if I had the biggest team, I would just work more and more. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. As long as you're hiring and training, that's a decision that you'll be able to make. If you hire and train and you build that team, it's up to you if you want to keep working, you know, crazy hours. But when you don't hire and train, it's not up to you. You have to work those crazy hours mm-hmm. because if you don't work, the money doesn't come in, the loans don't close, and that's the way it goes. So my focus is just putting our members, putting brokers in a position where they can, whether it's 3 or 5 years, they're working towards building a scalable model of real business. So, you know, if I were to tell people what I want their takeaways to be from today, it would be those two things. And my last thing is this, is just understand one major thing is we are in a market-driven business. And I've been in this business since 2003. I've seen unbelievable great times, and I've seen unbelievably mm-hmm. depressing, horrible times. We will see those great and horrible times again. It's inevitable. This is a market-driven business. This is just the way it goes. And with that said, we have another element that's at our door, and that's disruption. And there is disruption that's going to happen. It's not going to be this big, scary thing. You don't have to think it's going to happen tomorrow. But there's going to be disruption that comes as a result of technology, of crowdsourcing, of crowdfunding. I mean, the economy is changing in a very big way. What you need to understand is that if you are complacent, then those are things that are going to be damaging to you. If you are not saving money, if you are thinking that it's always going to be rainbows and sunshine, then those are things that are going to be very threatening for you. But if you are focused on building a good business, doing a good job for your customers, doing a good job for your employees, saving money, being in a position where you diversify your lifestyle, mm-hmm. being in a position where you are understanding that you have to add new real estate agents and you have to add more and more people to help you with client management and client retention, then the impact of any of these things on you, whether it's rates going up and the market getting more difficult, mm-hmm. whether it's disruption from a technology perspective, the more diversified your business is, the more flexible your business is, and the more that you save and you invest in your business, you will be better prepared and less damaged by any of the changes that happen. But if you just simply are a taker and you're sitting there making money, spending money, not investing in your business, not building up your rainy day fund, not investing in systems. If you are and you're not investing in relationships too, mm-hmm. then you will be you'll be more damaged when these tough days come. So just think long term. It's a mindset. It's one that is difficult for a lot of people to understand when the money is just there. But you have to invest in the future. You have to be thinking about the long game. So cool. That's what I got.
I appreciate it. Well, and I think I can say this on behalf of the whole broker channel, man, we appreciate everything you do and let's keep going. I see 2020 as a year where it knock on wood, it's going to be another good year, but we got to look at 2021. Like you said, we got to take this, we're getting a gift of maybe lower rates still next year. We're getting another gift, so it's time to prepare. Let's not waste another year.
That's right. You're 100% right. Thank you.
Hey,
I appreciate
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Broker to Broker podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss a single episode. Head over to aimgroup.com/broker to broker and subscribe on any platform where you listen to podcasts.